Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are back with another fun-filled edition of the M Squared TechCast. It's 3 p.m. Monday Eastern Time, and that means it's time for us.
Well, yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. And I think we're closing in on a century mark when it comes to the number of episodes we've had.
We just did 95. This is 96.
96. Okay. All right. So
we'll have to do something special for 100.
Then yeah,
we're going to kick off the Jessica cam on 100.
A birthday party or something like that. Yeah, she laughs.
Yeah,
we're serious.
Yeah, we are, actually.
No, but really, I meant that.
Yeah.
So on the phone, we have with us a longtime regular. I have to be careful how I use my words with women because sometimes I'll say old and I don't mean it like that. But as a longtime favorite of ours, Kathleen Norton-Schock, and she's going to be talking about what's happening with her show, the Diva Tech Talk, and, of course, the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. Take it away, Kathleen.
Thanks, Mike. We missed you last month. And as I just said, as I was getting on the phone, I'm going to reverse the order of the normal way we do this Women in Technology podcast with you. To talk first about the passion project that I helped found exactly 3 years ago with my dear friend, Nicole Johnson Scheffler, Diva Tech Talk. Diva Tech Talk is a series of podcasts inspired by leading women in tech, in order to help stem the tide of women either not joining the field or dropping out of the field, which they do at record numbers about halfway into their careers, whether you guys are aware of that or not. So Diva Tech Talk is a series of podcasts where we do the story of women in tech, women succeeding in tech, and they're all ages and all stages. And the intent, of course, is to get girls and women to see that no matter where you're coming from, it's an exciting field and many, many different people can join it. And this past weekend, Nicole is not with us right now because she is in Texas in the aftermath of the hurricanes, accepting our third set of awards. We won for the second time in a year, but this time, second time in a row, rather, we've won the 2017 Clarion Awards from the Association of Women in Communications, and this time we won two of them, one for Women's Issues Radio Program, which is what they think of as podcasts, or think of podcasts as, and then secondly, for Radio Regular Talk and Interview Program. So Nicole is there accepting these lovely glass statues for us and also becoming inspired by being with a nation full of women and some guys too, talking about the best processes for communication and how technology is empowering the whole field of communication. So the last time we talked about Diva Tech Talk is 60 days ago. And since that time, we've done six different podcasts, but I'll just talk about the last five. All of our top podcasts are downloadable from our website, www.divatechtalk.com. They're out there on SoundCloud, Stitcher, and of course on iTunes. And episode number 50 was Linda Dyshunt, who is a wonderful giver to our Southeast Michigan community. She is the founder and CEO of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan and just an amazing person. Episode 51 was Kirsten Edmondson Wolf, who heads application development for a little company called Microsoft operating out of Seattle. And the reason I love Kirsten's story is, as Matt kind of laughed at me the last time I told him this, she decided to go into tech. She was in political science and she was working for an NGO out of Washington, and she happened to be in Jakarta during the overthrow of the government in the 90s. And she saw all of these students on their mobile phones with their mobile apps empowering a revolution. And she said, if I want to change the world, I need to do it through technology. So she came back to school. She quit her job, came back and got her master's, and then proceeded to go up the track in technology and truly believes that at Microsoft, she has the opportunity to change the world. And speaking of changing the world,
the Far East, Kathleen, was living on their phones and using them as we do now with text messaging and apps and that kind of thing, probably about 10 years before we were.
Oh, so yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Sort of similar to when I ran a global product line at Unisys, when I used to laugh because everybody in U.S. banking thought they were ahead of the curve, when we personally knew that most self-service banking had started in Australia and the U.K. Yeah. A decade before the the United States had even thought of it.
Yep.
Here we go with our arrogance, right? So speaking of giving back to the world, though, our episode 52, I loved. It's Meredith Harper, who comes from the inner city of Detroit, as she puts it, and has done an amazing journey where she traveled throughout our country taking various tech jobs because she's part of a military family. But for the last 12 years, she has been the security and privacy officer at Henry Ford Health System. And she would tell anyone, in fact, the title of her podcast is We Get Nowhere by Ourselves, because in her story, it's the stories of amazing mentors, including faculty members who, when she had to travel, as a young career person, when she had to travel and in order to get through her master's program, her undergraduate and then her master's program, faculty members used to do things like sit in classes for her and then send her via UPS the notes and the questions because she was such a brilliant student, they wanted her to succeed. So Meredith was episode 52, talks a lot about security. Then episode 53, again, Diva Tech Talk is all about women exploring themselves and the rest of the world, was Natalia Petruzic, who has spent literally the last decade on first a personal journey of self-development, which then 3 years ago she translated into an entrepreneurial journey. She is the founder and CEO of Visby, which is taking vision boards to applications, or actually I should say creating applications that allow you to create vision boards. And she has pivoted her company twice. And now most of her services and products are not sold to the individual consumer, although that's how she originally conceived it. They're now sold through HR departments and performance improvement projects inside companies so that they can, in fact, create and I would almost say empower self-exploration among their employees to raise the level of employee satisfaction. So that's our episode 53. And then finally this morning we published episode 54. So we're only about halfway through our 100. But episode 54 is Dr. Rita Barrios, who is a dear friend of mine, who happens to be a single mom who made it through an amazing career. 14 of her first years were spent at CompuWare and also at Ford Credit. But she is now the head of the cybersecurity department at University of Detroit Mercy. And she has single-handedly increased the number of students in her program over a three-year period by a factor of 10. They went from 15 cybersecurity students annually to 150 annually that they graduate, and they are growing by leaps and bounds. So I would definitely, if you'd like to hear the story of a woman who did it on her own, raising two children, one of whom who is a rocket scientist right now, the woman child is a rocket scientist at NASA, I suggest tuning in to our episode 54 for Rita Barrios. So that's the story of Diva Tech Talk right now. And Rita and I met, and part of the reason we were privileged to get her as a guest is that Rita and I met doing charity work, doing philanthropic work at the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, where she used to be a leader on the sponsorship and membership team while I was handling marketing, as I still do. So it was amazing to talk to her because I hadn't seen her in a while about it because her university does one of our 7 summer camps for girls. Through her good offices. And she was always about trying to get sponsors to help contribute to that $1 million worth of scholarship money we've raised over the last decade in all of our other programs. So it's perfect that we just published Rita, because then I'd like to segue into what's going on at the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. And most things about MCWT can be found by going to their website, which is www.mcwt.org. And the very first thing, we have a few deadlines right in the offing. For the second year in a row, as we talked about in the last podcast, MCWT is fielding the Woman of the Year in Technology Award, which is awarded to a woman who has led or empowered other women in a way that is consonant with our mission, which is to make Michigan the number one state for women in technology, which means giving women tools, giving women education, giving women leadership examples, encouraging them, collaborating with them, and getting them excited, right, about joining the field. So the Woman of the Year in Technology Award, the deadline for that is September 20th, which is only 2 days from today. And the application can be found on our website at www.mcwt.org. So I would really strongly suggest that if you have a woman you'd like to nominate, or if you are a woman who thinks you qualify, and again, you don't have to be a woman who's done 30 years of work. You can be a woman doing 5 years of amazing work or several years of amazing work. And please put your application in. Last year, the award winner was Nancy Benevich Gilby, who is very, very active at the University of Michigan in their entrepreneurial program. But we had women, again, of all ages and stages who were nominated. And the only requirement, you do not have to be an MCWT member. You just have to do, as I said, be part of, you know, supporting our kind of mission. And you have to be available to come to the IT prom, which is Michigan Council of Women in Technology's annual Black Tie Gala, which will take place on October 28th down at the Ford Conference Center in Dearborn. It is a gala with a roaring 20s theme this year. And anyone now, we've opened up individual tickets from the website at mcwt.org. We still have sponsorship packages. So if you have a company or just a group of people who'd like to buy a sponsorship, please feel free to contact Kim Cross at MCWT or just go online and you can pull down that event and then pull down the packages, and the email address to get more information is right there. So those are two deadlines. Then we have a few more. Our web contest for middle school and high school girls, we opened up the application for that on September 1st, and it closes on October 1st. And then the contest will proceed to get underway. It's about 7 to 10 weeks of girls working on pulling together their cool websites. So I would strongly suggest, again, if anybody's interested in that, that you go to our website. If you are a teacher, a parent, an aunt, an uncle, a grandfather, a grandmother, and you have a middle school or high school girl interested in web technology, it's a great contest. Last year, we had 170 teams enter. The last 12 won in a big award ceremony that we do in December with all the parents there to look at the site. And as usual, there are many cool things. There are a lot of prizes, and one of them usually is an internship of some kind is awarded to the winning team, or at least some opportunity to collaborate with one of our sponsors. So definitely I suggest that girls look at that, and that parents of girls look at it. And then along those same lines for grades 4 through 8, we have expanded into Western Michigan over the last several years. So on the 21st of October, we're doing a half-day event in Grand Rapids called Girls Rock IT. We did a bigger one of those down in Livonia last year. This year, this half-day, we're going to do two of them, and one of them is a half-day event for the western side of the state. And that's for girls in grades 4 through 8. And again, all the information is available from our website. And then finally,
Kathleen, we've run out of time. I'm sorry, but we're going to have to leave it there. If you want more information on all of these programs, please go to MCWT, right?
.org.
Okay. Kathleen Norton-Schock, longtime friend of the show, talking about Diva Tech Talk, her own excellent podcast, and the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. We'll be right back after this sponsor's message.
Yes.
How about that?
On the
M-Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with segment two of today's M Squared TechCast. We've got another longtime friend of the show and a veteran observer of the automotive industry and the technology attached thereto, one David Cole, formerly the University of Michigan, the Transportation Research Institute, now with a nifty organization called Auto Harvest that seeks to breathe new life into automotive-related patents that aren't being used. But he wants to discuss a whole raft of issues surrounding automotive technology. David, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be with you, Matt. Mike, always, there's no end to interesting topics in the auto business, and they're just getting more interesting as time moves on.
Well, you got a whole raft of them here, so take them in whatever order you choose. Go ahead.
Well, there was an interesting story in the Wall Street Journal. In fact, it was a lead on the third section, and the whole question is cybersecurity. And the lead story was the danger of the hackable car. And as we look at what we've had with electronics, and that's been going on for a long time, and as we move into potentially autonomous vehicles, we're looking at a whole raft of potential issues related to the hacking in so many pathways into the car for people that we don't want to be there. So it's going to be a very interesting time. And I think what we tend to do is kind of take for granted that, gee, we're dealing with all this computer technology and software. We're not really going to have problems like this. And the fact is, we're going to have a lot more problems than we've had with traditional controls.
Yeah, and the bad guys know that. They're just sort of salivating, thinking about all the opportunities, right?
They are. But one of the most interesting things is that the industry is hiring potential bad guys to try to expose the problems before the real bad guys step in. For example, Chrysler or Fiat Chrysler had somebody hack, I think it was Phoenix, and said, you guys are vulnerable here. So they put a package together to keep that from occurring. In fact, the guys that did this to Chrysler, GM hired to try to hack into their technology. So it's kind of a wild game period here as far as computer hacking. And I don't think it's ever going to go away.
No.
It's going to be a very interesting thing to watch.
It's measures and countermeasures. When we figure out a way to stop them, they figure out a new way to get in.
That's right. That's right. That's sort of life in general. Another point that I wanted to make, you hear a fair amount these days about zero emission vehicles, and the implication is that if you drive an electric vehicle, it's zero emissions. And it's not true. When you look at how you make things, you use energy. When you use electricity, if it comes from the traditional grid of coal, natural gas, oil, or whatever, even when you start talking about renewables like sun and wind, there still is a problem. For example, one thing that people don't think about is that when you transmit electricity from where it is generated to where it is used, that current flowing through a wire has what we call an I squared R loss. That's what makes wires hot. That's why you see birds perch on wires in cold weather, is they're warm. So there really is no such thing as a zero emissions anything. And we ought to call people on that because
that's basically that
they really don't know what they're talking about.
That's basically the second law of thermodynamics, right? You know, the second law is not locked. And, you know, it takes energy to make a battery. It takes energy to make, you know, sheet
that's
metal.
Exactly
it takes,
right.
takes metal. It
Anytime
takes energy to make
convert
anything.
Energy from one form to another, you're going to have a loss. I used to work for the Department of Energy as one of their consultants to review ideas that people submitted to them to get money. And one of the things that was amazing is the number of technologies. It was kind of like you use my technology and you don't have to stop every 100 miles to drop off fuel. That's probably not going to happen.
Well, and you know, when it comes to electric vehicles, it also depends on how the electricity is generated, too, because if you're generating it at a coal-fired plant, you're not really doing yourself any favors, you know, environmentally.
That's right. So, that's right. But the point is that there's no such thing as zero emissions anything. And we have kind of, in a popular sense, led people to believe that if you have an electric vehicle, that is zero emissions. And in fact, an interesting aspect of electric vehicles are the government credits. And I think Tesla, for example, is getting close to the edge where they're going to lose credits on vehicles they sell. And that's about $7,500 higher cost to whoever buys that electric vehicle. So there's a very interesting issue related to policy and the stuff that we're talking about is supposedly zero emissions.
And one of your topics is Trump, which I assume Trump was not going to be in favor of extending that credit, right?
Well, we don't know. I mean, there was a lot of talk around the election, and it's kind of subsided. There was new negotiations going, for example, on the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. He initially wanted to pull out. The industry said, wait a minute, now you pull out of that, and you're going to really cause us serious problems. And that's pretty much true across the spectrum of things that he's dealing with. And it's an uncertainty, and nobody likes uncertainty, investors or certainly manufacturers. But it's a reality that we have to deal with here. And hopefully, as we move into more details of this, there will be sound judgment used in what's going on. Even on immigration, we don't have the skilled people if we can't tap into some highly skilled internationals. And on another side, we don't have the people to pick crops and do a lot of relatively low-paid manual labor unless we can bring in immigrants or people even temporarily that will do that kind of stuff. So it's a very complex world. And the problem is somebody that is that's like me. I tend to know more about things that I think I know more about things that I know little about than the things that I know a lot about. When I know a lot about something, I tend to be pretty cautious. If I don't know much, I'm free to talk.
Okay. We also have talent and autonomy. I'm assuming they're not the same thing.
Yeah, talent is talent's an interesting one for me right now. I'm seeing a really big push in the state of Michigan. I do public address announcing for high school sports events in Dearborn, and they actually the state is sponsoring little billboards in high schools and announcements
right.
during timeouts of sports events that I have to read about the skilled trades, which, you know, I find refreshing, frankly.
Oh, absolutely. We've had a stigma associated with getting your hands dirty. In fact, a lot of the problems are relegated to the parents in the sense that I want my kid to get his hands dirty. Or her hands dirty, but it's by punching a computer key. And the number one shortage of talent in Michigan are skilled trades and technicians. And the fact is that it is not bad to have hands-on kind of capability. It's very important. And in fact, when you look at some of the best-paying jobs right now, there are jobs that are very much hands-on. And I may have mentioned this before, my old department at the University of Michigan, the Mechanical Engineering Department, there are three major courses where the students work on teams and they design, make, test, and present. Then you look at all the student projects, the solar car, Formula SAE, Mini Baja. It's come back, but we still have a negative stigma associated working with your hands. Mm-hmm. And we've got to change that. Another thing we've done is taken shop classes out. They're expensive. The shop teacher can earn three times as much money outside of education. But somehow we have to help people understand that hands-on is not bad, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, I remember shop in high school. Everybody took shop in high school.
Well, I did, too. I have a model yacht that I built in the seventh grade that I can't imagine that I did in wood shop. It's really special.
Yep.
But metal shop, machine shop, those were all courses I worked in on my grandfather's farm in the summertime. And when something broke, you didn't run to town to buy new. You fixed what you had. And it's a psychology that we have kind of let pass, and we've got to bring it back.
Yeah.
Well, for one thing, it's more sustainable. I mean, if you want to get back into the environmental concern, right, rather than just throwing away something, you know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for some reason, we sort of have let things slip. There's a really interesting piece this was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal today about the cyber age and how well paid people are in that area compared to making things. But when we look at this cool tech, it only has value if it's embedded in something, you know, a refrigerator, a car, a truck, or a house. And I think I wrote a piece about it called Manufacturing Renaissance. I may have sent it to you, Mike. And the whole idea is that, yeah, tech is terrific, important. I love it. I've been on a couple of software company boards. But it has to be embedded in something before it has value. And what we're beginning to see is the commoditization of this really cool tech. And the stuff that isn't the commodity is what that tech is in. It's like a car. You've got to have tooling. You've got to have people in manufacturing, designers, engineers. I mean, it's a different world. So I think we're going to see an interesting shift here over the next few years.
All right, David, we've got
manufacturing will be back.
We've got about 3 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about autonomy in the time we have left.
Well, autonomy is interesting. I can't remember where I saw this just in the last day or so about autonomous cab drivers or autonomous taxi cabs. And the question was, the people that they had talked to were not excited about being autonomous riders.
Yes.
I'd like to see somebody in
especially
the car.
Especially in New York. Can you imagine that in New York? God, be like, that'd be scary, wouldn't it?
It would be scary. So the complexity that we see in autonomy, and we've talked about this before, is very high. There is a tremendous amount of uncertainty. Some people tend to have a kind of an artificial picture of it. And even the industry is probably over-talking about some of these things. I can out-talk you, but the execution is tough. Certainly, we're going to see autonomy in very controlled route type of environments. But when you get into the real world where there's changes in weather, the LIDAR sees a little something that's different than what is expected. We get into the liability issues. That's a big deal. So the fully autonomous vehicle where we're going on a trip while we're sleeping in the back seat is probably quite a long ways away. And the people that really know what's going on there. But certainly the different levels as we move to these higher levels are going to be very, very helpful in terms of reducing accidents, injuries, fatalities, and overall costs in society. I think we've talked about this before. One of the highest cost items today in an emergency room in the hospital is related to highway trauma. If we can dramatically reduce that, as well as insurance costs, that's a good deal for all of us.
Yeah, I think 90% of accidents are driver error.
That's right. But the reliability required of the new technology, the autonomous technology for level 5, is not 95%, 99%. It's 99.99999.
Yeah.
Because the liability issues, and everywhere in this country you find out there's a whole cadre of liability lawyers that are just salivating at the prospect of being able to sue big companies.
1-800-CALL-SOMEBODY, right? You know, so...
That's right.
We don't want to give them a free plug here. We've got less than a minute left, David. Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing with Auto Harvest.
Well, what Auto Harvest is a marketplace for intellectual property. It helps people connect with one another that wouldn't find one another. I was giving a talk in Traverse City to the Recon Club, and afterwards I talked to a fellow from Stryker, the medtech company, and he said, we put our IP in Auto Harvest because maybe somebody in auto can use stuff that we have found that is patented. And likewise, we may be able to find something that we could use because those worlds never really cross. And what Auto Harvest is kind of a dating site for intellectual property to speed innovation.
We're going to have to leave it at that. How do they find more about Auto Harvest?
AutoHarvest.org.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much, David Cole of Auto Harvest and a host of other organizations. Yep. And we'll be right back in just a minute with the next segment of the M Squared TechCast. Right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
We'll be right back.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush.
And we're back on our third segment, and we have, I'm not sure if he's calling in from Traverse City, but I know he lives there, Enrico Schaefer. Are you in Traverse City today?
I am in Traverse City today. Beautiful weather up here this week and last.
I know you're the world traveler because I get your Facebook feed. You make you very envious. Now, I don't want you to go anyplace warm during the winter. Promise me you're not going to do that, right?
You know, I'm going to take the Fifth Amendment on that one, for sure.
Don't blame you.
Okay. Well, Enrico just came back from a big drone conference called InterDrone. I think that was in lost wages out there, right? You hopefully didn't go to the tables and lose a lot of money, right?
Actually won some this time, so that was good. I'm not down. I'm quite certain of that.
Well, good. So tell us all about it. What was the conference all about? How many folks were there? What was going on? What were the highlights?
Sure. So it's InterDrone, and it's the largest commercial drone conference really in the U.S. There's some other conferences out there that are a blend of military and commercial and other. But really, InterDrone is just pure commercial drones, which means people who have bought drones that want to use them for business purposes and are flying under the Part 107 regulations implemented by the FAA. And in Part 107 are all the rules and regulations you have to abide by if you're using a drone for any sort of business purpose. So InterDrone is devoted to that. They have 5,000 plus attendees. Michael Huerta, who is the chairman of the FAA, attended and did the keynote. They have a massive hall of vendors just showing off all the new technology. And, you know, they do it every year. So you're able to see what happens year to year and how things have progressed and how things have changed.
Okay. And I guess, oh, I'm sorry, Matt, step down there.
No, that's all right. I just wanted to know where was the event in Vegas and, like, how full was it? How full was it? How many people?
Yeah, so 5,000 people. Ooh. And hundreds of vendors, and it was at the Rio. Oh, and okay. They moved it to the Rio because they needed more space because the conference just keeps growing year in and year out.
Hmm. So anti-drone technology was one of the big ones, right?
Yeah, one of the more interesting platforms there was anti-drone technology. It was actually a blend of a company that has done a lot in the military space that was then crossing over into the commercial space. And so they had a really interesting drone that at its most base level, it shot a net that could capture a rogue drone or a drone that's being used for improper or illegal purposes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps a terrorist, right?
Yep.
And it would grab that drone with the net, and then either that drone could drop to the earth by parachute if it was too heavy, or could be brought back to a location by that drone. Now, that was the base level. This thing was a multi-$100,000 drone that essentially never misses. So there was a lot of technology built into it to be able to not only navigate to the drone, to follow the drone, and then be able to shoot the net and essentially guarantee that it will grab that drone. The reason why that's important is that, you know, we still have this kind of tension between the drone pilots and operators and society, you know, in general, right? There's a lot of people out there who are very concerned about the fact that drones are flying around in the sky. They're uncertain of the intent of the pilots who are flying those drones, whether or not they're invading privacy, whether or not they're lawful, whether or not there's some sort of improper purpose. If a drone is flying in a high populated area or by a stadium, the issue is, you know, is perhaps most pointed, which is, is that drone supposed to be there? Is that drone doing something it shouldn't be doing? So now we're starting to see some anti-drone technology really start to take hold. And if you're a stadium owner, there's little question that in the relatively near future, you will have anti-drone technology. And that will be a safety system that will be in place. And that will make everyone feel a lot more comfortable about the fact that there are drones up in the sky in general. And so that was one of the more interesting things at the conference, was this really high-end technology to bring a drone down. You know, I think we all certainly can appreciate the fact that there is a, you know, everyone out there that we see is probably flying for good purpose, but there's always this concern of someone using it for an improper purpose.
Yeah, I read an article from a UK newspaper that said they're worried about ISIS using drones to drop little bombs and things like that. So that could be another issue, you know, like flying over an open-air stadium, dropping little bombs is not a good thing, right?
No, and it's really a bit of a misnomer and a misconception, because the reality is that, you know, there's a reason why people are using pressure cookers and they're stuffing them full of explosive and these types of things. Those are very heavy devices, right? So the average drone that you see in the air can't carry anything approximating that, right? So in order to, you know, dropping little bombs typically can't do much and aren't going to be very effective as a weapon. But as you get into some of these bigger platforms, and the drones are getting much bigger, that can carry more weight, they do potentially have more capability. And so the interesting thing is, I think people have had this concern about use of drones by terrorists for many years, and yet it's never happened. In fact, the most that we've ever really seen is people trying to drop drugs into the prison yard using a drone. So it hasn't happened yet, and one of the reasons is it's really a poor technology for actual, causing an effect. If you're a terrorist, you'd much rather find some schmoes willing to strap a bunch of stuff to them head to toe in order to cause enough of an explosion to, you know, make an impact.
Okay. Also, I guess we got a lot of innovations in the technology beyond the anti-drone technology, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was really the big difference this year to last year was the fact that in the exhibit hall, you just saw a lot more money. There is just a lot more investment in the technology, a lot more sophisticated platforms. The whole market for commercial UAV is kind of growing into niches. So there are going to be drones that are used for agriculture. There are going to be drones that are used for industrial inspection. And there's going to be the associated software that will go with those different platforms. So there was a really big leap forward in technology, the software and the hardware for drones. We saw a lot more really big companies there as well that were, you know, really starting to get into the drone game. A big tipping point for the market is when these big corporations start realizing that their competitors are using drones for some purpose, and they want to know what their drone program is, and they're finding out they don't have one. So they're starting to take a hard look at starting an internal drone program for themselves and potentially offering drone services to their existing customers in order to maintain their competitive advantage.
Okay. Now, the drones, FAA, speaking of the FAA, are allowing drones to brand or break some. I can do this. Yeah. I didn't even have a beer.
I was going to say, what about.
That's all, folks.
What about Brenda?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right.
Bend or break the rules in Houston so that they can fly over for relief and search and rescue and things like that, right? I could do it.
Yeah, so we saw, you know, some really interesting things with the hurricanes that have been coming through, and including the one in Houston. What people need to understand is, at least on the commercial side, you can't just put a drone in the air. There's some very onerous regulations that go on commercial drone operators that are all designed to make sure that the drone operations are safe. And in any sort of downtown area, you've got to go get special permission and special authorizations to fly. And right now, that takes weeks or months. when the hurricane in Houston occurred, right, what the FAA quickly realized is they have this massive disaster and virtually all the airports are underwater.
Yep.
Most of the helipads are unusable and they need to get reconnaissance on, you know, people who need rescuing, on the damage to infrastructure, getting aid to people, medicine that need it but are trapped on a rooftop. And they decided that they were going to start issuing at a fairly aggressive pace these ECOAs. That's ECOA. It's a certificate of authorization. The E stands for emergency. And so there were hundreds and hundreds of ECOAs that were issued to commercial operators as the FAA tried to get these drones in the air to be able to help with the hurricane situation. And it's really the first time we've seen that happen. And you had helicopters and drones sharing the sky trying to deal with that awful situation.
But these are the really big drones, right? I mean, like the ones you showed me.
Nope.
They're not big drones?
They're not very well. I mean, they're the standard DJI drones in many instances. You know, the ones that the recreational users are using as well. They're certainly not mini drones, but you know, these are drones. A lot of them were less than 4 pounds, and they're the ones that you could buy at Best Buy.
Yeah,
they're able to do amazing things.
So they're like the 3 foot ones, basically, in terms of their
size.
Yes, the size.
Yeah, or a foot and a half or two in many instances.
All right,
so,
cool.
Relatively small.
Yep. I did want to point out to you, too, we're having an event coming up at Lawrence Tech. The College of Architecture is on people using technology to do good. And there's a company in Ypsilanti now that is working on drones to take medical supplies to remote places.
It's a big drone. I've seen it. It's about 9 foot across, you know. So
But that's, I mean, those are the kinds of applications that I think could really take off. Sorry.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, exactly, Matt. That's a good one. But yes, exactly. So, and we want to get to that point where people start to understand that drones really have an amazing ability to give societal benefit and to really help do things that are otherwise really dangerous for people to do and to save people's lives. And once, you know, we start to see all that happening in the real world, people are going to feel a lot more comfortable about drones.
Absolutely.
We got about 2 minutes left. Any new FAA regs we want to cover real quickly in the last 2 minutes?
Not on the regulatory side. We've got the FAA is doing is essentially continuing its effort to try and build grid maps for the United States for all controlled airspace so that people don't have to wait weeks or months to be able to get authorization or a waiver to fly in controlled airspace. Once these grid maps are completed, they'll be put into an app, and any commercial drone pilot will go stand where they want to fly, access the app, and will tell them immediately yes or no and what the altitude is. So it'll be real-time authorization. You know, the thing that's really happening out there at a higher pace is that you've got a lot of municipalities still passing laws trying to limit drone operations. Almost all of those are invalid under Supreme Court precedent, which really gives the FAA exclusive authority to be able to regulate the national airspace.
Okay, last minute left. What's going on with the drone park up in Traverse City?
So that is moving forward. They're looking at different locations, and they are they're looking forward to spring to trying to implement a drone park up there through the sharedsky.org nonprofit, which is trying to blend the community's interest in safety and privacy with the drone community's desire to fly.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Enrico Schaefer, you've got everybody all excited. They want to reach out to you. How do they do that?
You can go to www.dronelaw.pro, that's .pro, and there's lots of information there, and they can contact me, Enrico Schaefer, through the website.
All right, thanks, Enrico. We'll talk to you again soon. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M2 TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with the last segment today of the M Squared TechCast. Last but certainly not least is our friend and longtime friend of the show, Dan Lorman, a security expert, cybersecurity expert who works out of Grand Ledge. Dan, welcome.
Thanks. Great to be with you guys again, Matt.
So are you in Grand Ledge today or somewhere else?
Yeah, actually, I am. Actually, last week I was in Detroit at the Secure World event and saw a lot of friends there. And but yeah, I'm in Grand Ledge today, actually this week, and I'm off to Texas next week. So
okay, well, we want to talk to you about Secure World, but obviously, topic one is Equifax, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you know it's grabbed all the headlines, you know, that aren't related to the hurricanes, yeah. You know, but yeah, the Equifax breach has been a huge deal, and thought maybe we could walk through some of the timelines and then we could talk through some of the questions. But, you know, the Equifax breach really supposedly originally was occurred back in mid-May, but Equifax discovered the hack, at least they've said publicly, on July 29th, and immediately stopped the intrusion. There was a lot of controversy in early August about whether top executives knew about, you know, this before they sold their stock, and actually getting some press today and over the weekend talking about some lawsuits related to that, and actually lots of lawsuits, but what they knew when. And then on September 7th, Equifax alerted the public that they had this incident. They didn't call it a breach. They called it an incident, which is pretty typical. But the share values dropped around 13% to 14% of their value on September 8th. We have senators that are asking Equifax to answer detailed questions about the breach. And really, they're talking about the breach affecting 143 million Americans, and then that number is expected even to rise from there.
Well, on the timing, gosh, they wait till everybody's attention's turned to hurricanes. And, oh, by the way, yep. We got this little hack we need to talk about. So
not so little.
Not so little.
Yeah. So what would you – let's talk about the timeline of this a little bit more. I mean, how would you have handled this?
Well, certainly, I mean, I think the biggest challenge out there, we're talking cybersecurity and technology, is the fact that, you know, it appears, at least what we publicly know, is that there was a vulnerability in place. It was Apache Struts, which is a framework for creating web applications written in Java, you know, long. You know, for those who aren't technically, you know, inclined listening to this, I mean, basically, it was a patch that was out there. It was a known patch. That actually was getting a lot of attention in March of this year, and supposedly this actually happened in May. So they're getting tons and tons of negative press about how can such important data be so poorly protected. And, you know, there's some examples on Krebs' blog that, you know, and other websites reported about some other Equifax websites down in South America that had admin as their, you know, username and password, and other types of things that may or may not be related. But clearly, this was a known vulnerability that was you know, basically very, very quickly you know, exploited. So I mean, I think that the challenge is there's been like one problem after another in the press around this whole thing. Like, they announced immediately there was an announcement that you could get free credit protection, but there was a clause in the website that
you couldn't sue them.
Like,
you couldn't sue them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a huge issue. And then they kind of withdrew that, you know, from a lot of pressure from attorney generals in New York and other people around the country. Senators talked about that, and I think that issue was huge. They withdrew that. But then there was discussion that you had to sign up, and that they were actually using this as a business opportunity. So, you know, now they had all these people who were going to sign up for their service, get 1 year of free service, which most people don't think is going to be enough. 1 year is not going to really And this is all your most sensitive data. This is all your, you know, your social security number, your personal data, all those places you've lived, those cars you owned, the houses, all of that is in there. This is the most personal data. And so, you know, how they addressed that and said that they would give you credit protection, but just for, like, you know, their own service, not even for the other two credit agencies. So there's a lot of criticism about how they even responded after the incident. They appeared that they weren't really ready.
Well, I read a Wall Street Journal article that said that this patch was sent out in March, and supposedly Equifax, I don't know if they even moved in March, they might not have fixed it till May, and then they went on later in the summer and discovered, oh, I guess we didn't fix it all, and we have to patch some other systems. I mean, who is the CISO there, Dan? Do you know this person? Sounds like he hasn't got a job anymore,
no,
right?
No, their CISO just retired, and there has been some criticism about that.
And so they've announced on different reports, one that they did an early retirement, another one that they're fired. But there's different reports out there, but apparently they're no longer with the company, which is probably not surprising.
Yeah, there's a Market Watch story out right now, Dan, noting that the CISO there was a music composition major in Georgia, which sounds really bad, but, you know, a lot of tech knowledge is, I mean, tech changes so quickly, and a lot of the knowledge, the whole alphabet soup of certifications, can be gained piece by piece without a degree. So that troubles me less than, I mean, if she was up, and it was a woman, if she was up on her certifications and everything, then it wouldn't bother me that 15 years ago she studied music, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it actually, right out there today, you're right. I would agree with you, Matt, that there's a lot of back and forth. Is, you know, don't knock the music major. I'm not so, you know, that's probably, I would agree
it sure
with that.
Looks,
you know,
bad,
you know,
though.
So, it does look bad, but I mean, I think that by itself is less worrying. Or, you know, there's probably a lot of, I mean, quite frankly, when I was at Valparaiso and at Johns Hopkins getting my master's degree, there were a lot of music, math, computer science, double and triple major. Yeah. So, I mean, but that by itself is not as important to me as the fact that they clearly weren't doing their job. They didn't really have a very good plan when this happened. And, I mean, they're going to be, you know, facing a lot of lawsuits, a lot of issues. And this data, you know, can never come back. I mean,
yeah,
there's talk about the scope of this thing, guys, really transforming the way the whole financial system works. Because basically right now everything is built around our Social Security numbers. And we knew it was bad when, like, the OPM breach, Office of Personnel Management, had a government breach in our biometric data, our fingerprints got, you know, if you had a top secret clearance, that information got out in that OPM breach, and that was 23 million people. But this is basically all the Americans who have credit in any form. You know, if you bought a house, a car, credit cards, you're in this database. And so it's huge. The impact is huge, and the way we even use Social Security numbers is really, you know, in doubt now. So I mean, I think really the scary part about this thing is we're going to be having hearings in Capitol Hill. We're going to be hearing about this, you know, with all kinds of different possible follow-on attacks. I mean, we don't really know yet who really even has the data and how they might be using it now or might be using it down the road, you know, maybe 6 months down the road. All of a sudden, all kinds of identity theft occurs, or maybe next spring people use this data to file a tax return in your name.
Yeah.
And so that whole issue of tax returns is going
to
hit us.
That's already happened to my daughter once.
So, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Somebody filed a tax return in her name,
and
they came after us. The IRS did. Yeah, saying that I claimed a bunch of deductions for her. This was when she was still in college, and all those deductions got overturned, and they took them a year to tell me why, and that was why, because somebody else filed a tax return in her name using her social.
Hey, the other thing that Wall Street Journal article said is they thought that this was so sophisticated it was probably nation state sponsored. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's really hard to know. I mean, it really is very, very hard to know. I mean, the vulnerability that we're talking about, if it was just as simple as exploiting that vulnerability, it was not that sophisticated. Now, they may know other things. They may know that actually is not, that's a false, you know, that's a false report. It's really hard to know is what's fake news. I mean, I guess FireEye and Mandiant are in there doing, their analysis, and they're not going to talk. I suspect we're going to find out a lot more as time goes on, the rest of the story, if you will. We're still learning things about the Sony hack from a few years back, so I'm sure we're going to keep learning more as time goes on. Could it be nation state? I mean, it's possible, or it could be criminal, organized crime, criminal gangs. It's very, very hard to know, if it's, I'd say both, but it could be people affiliated with a foreign government it's very hard to know. We've had this conversation in the past with Richard Steen, and, who's actually working for the government of, say, Russia, and who's a contractor, and who's maybe kind of helping them. And so I don't know. I have no idea who actually caused this and who actually did the exploitation and got the data. So I think that remains to be seen. I am very concerned, though, and I think one of the big challenges moving forward is I'm hearing, been on a couple different Bright Talk panels last week. People really need to be monitoring their credit reports, all three credit agencies, not just Equifax, really looking at, anything that's suspicious, any kind of activity. A lot of people are locking down their credit now. They're not letting anything new come on. And if you lock down your credit, it doesn't affect your current credit cards and things. So you could still do, make charges on your credit card. But as far as new credit, that would lock it down. The challenge is I'm not going to make that recommendation. Guys, it'd be interesting your views on this. Everyone is in a different situation. If you're about to buy a house, then you can't be locking down your credit, right? So, everyone needs to kind of know what situation are they in, but we all need to have good credit monitoring, and we need to be looking at our current credit, applications, people who are opening up new credit right now, and really looking hard at that and really monitoring that.
Hmm. Are there any particular services that you would recommend out there that folks maybe take a look at I know without naming names, I don't want to do a commercial for somebody, but are there any ones that you really like?
I mean, there are a number of good ones. I mean, I hate to just list one. I mean, I will tell you one of the big kind of dilemmas out there right now is, do you use the free one that they're offering right now from Equifax? And a lot of people say, no, don't, it's not independent. It's not a third party. They're going to come right back and market that to you a year later. There's talk. I would just say, stay tuned. There's talk that they're going to come out with a new version of that might have, all three credit protection agencies involved and not just Equifax's. So, and it would be all monitored by an independent third party. If that were to happen, I would definitely, free is good, right? there are, LifeLock. There's a lot of them out there that people know that are, you see on TV. There are a lot of good ones available. Make sure you're looking at all three credit protection agencies, though, and not just one, because you really want to make sure that, they're monitoring your credit in all of those different ways. I don't want to just be a commercial for any one specific one, although I just mentioned one. I would just say also, keep in mind that that a lot of times people get these offers. Like my wife and I got one from a local company we have do business with that had a breach, and people need to sign up for them when those letters come in. A lot of people think, well, I already have it happening. I got this letter. Well, you have to actually take advantage of that and sign up and actually follow through for that actually to be started. So make sure that you take advantage of those offers when they do come in and you actually do sign up.
Hey, I know we don't have much time left, but I wanted to get your opinion. The feds have now said Kaspersky can't be working with the government anymore because he's an old FSA agent. He knows Putin. God, he's got to be a spy or something, right? And I know Eugene has been saying, no. So what do you think?
I think we need to come back and talk about this one some more next time, because I'll tell you, it's interesting. I'm as you know my background, like former NSA.
Right.
I'm sure they have their reasons why. So my gut tells me they know something. They're not going to tell us what it is. I wish we knew specifically that there's something going on. So I trust the government on this one. I think that my fear is what this could be opening up Pandora's box. of like, well, now will other foreign governments not let U.S. companies into their, you know, area? It's like, you know, what is that litmus test? I think what's really hard right now is what I do. I'm sure there's reasons why they're doing this, and it's probably, you know, justified. I think the question is, without giving us the evidence or saying this is the spying that was going on, this was the actions, this is why we're doing it, which we'll probably never know, then other people could do the same thing. And are we setting a precedent for other products, for other companies? What might other countries say? You can't use this U.S. product. So I think this is really opening up a big, huge challenge going forward. I don't think this is the last we're going to hear about this.
And we're going to have to end it on that note.
All right. Thanks very much, Dan Lerman, a cybersecurity expert. Also want to thank our other guests today, Drone Law Pro Enrico Schaefer, auto expert David Cole, and longtime friend of the show and Women in Technology advocate Kathleen Norton-Schock. Good show today, Mike.
Well, we try.
Indeed. Okay. So we'll be back next time with number 97 as we continue to close in on that century mark.
That Jessica cam on 100.
Okay. For right now. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at PodcastDetroit.com.